friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about the ins and outs of friendship. As I wrote about in my book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship, friendship isn't easy for anyone. It takes time, intentionality, and lots of grace. And sometimes we have to navigate complexities and hurts in friendship that leave us uncertain and crushed. I'm right there with you, and my guests are here to help us think through it all. Today, I've invited Tilly Dillehay onto the show to talk about envy and how it affects our friendships. I didn't previously know Tilly, but as we started talking, God used her words to actually convict me of envy in one of my own relationships, which I later confessed to that friend the very next day, and it has brought so much freedom in my life in an area where I have been struggling the past few months. So I personally am so thankful to have had this conversation, and I am really happy to get to introduce Tilly to you. Tilly is a pastor's wife living in rural Tennessee, so rural, in fact, that we had a few internet connection issues that you may notice in terms of audio quality. But don't let that stop you, because Tilly shares with me how she came to faith in Christ from agnosticism, about her years-long struggle with envy in a specific relationship, and about how she learned to diagnose and confess envy. Tilly's written a new book that I am currently reading and am really loving, called Seeing Green, Don't Let Envy Color Your World. I know you're going to learn so much from her, so let's just get to the conversation. Here, friends, is my chat with Tilly Dillehay. Tilly, thank you for joining me on my podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get to know you a little bit, because I really know nothing of you and where you're coming from. All I know is you have written a book, and I got it in the mail, and I'm super excited to get to dive into it. But will you introduce yourself before we get started in our conversation?
Sure. Yeah. So I am a pastor's wife out in rural Tennessee, like an hour east of Nashville, a tiny little town called Hartsville. And my husband's been full-time with that church for about a year now, but we have two little girls, 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I have been, in the past, I've worked in journalism. I was the editor of a weekly newspaper for a while and the editor of a magazine after that. And then I came home to be with the girls full-time when the second girl was born. So that's pretty much what I'm doing. Yeah.
Has your husband been in ministry before this church, or is this his first pastorate?
He has been with this church for 10 years. A lot of that time as a pastoral intern. He's been full-time with the church since, for about the last year. And he was ordained probably a year or 2 years before that. I can't remember exactly, but he was an intern at the church, just teaching there and in seminary for a long time. And that was through the time that we were getting married. So we actually met at the church. I moved out here to the middle of nowhere as a single girl, because I had just become a Christian and I wanted to be in this church. I knew people here, basically.
Oh,
I knew people
in the church. You chose to move there for the church.
I chose to move there for the church. I was between jobs. So I was just kind of like, there was nothing holding me in Nashville. I grew up in Nashville, and I just was such a baby and felt so needy and hungry, I guess, that I just wanted to be somewhere where people knew me, and I was so comfortable in the country here. So I moved here, yeah, kind of without another plan. Mm-hmm. And families in the church hosted me for a long time, and I got work out here, and I kind of thought I was getting away from all men everywhere also, but there was only one single man at the church that time.
And it ended up being
Justin Dillehay. Yeah.
Nice. So would you say you're a country girl?
I think in my heart I am, because I just, when I came back out here, I'd actually lived here for a few years as a young girl in this very area. But when I came back out, it was like coming home somehow. I just had this feeling of kind of exhaling and saying, yes.
Wow.
I'm just not a city girl.
So you just said you became a Christian right before that. So how did you become a Christian?
Well, so I was in my last couple of years of college and just out of college, I was an agnostic. I grew up in a Christian home, but I was fully embracing this kind of agnostic worldview. as a young adult. And my parents had, we'd always been friends with this pastor out here who's a biblical counselor. And I was a real miserable, miserable person as well. I mean, I was having a terrible time just in life. And they said, why don't you go out and do some counseling with this pastor and kind of argue with him about your objections to the faith? So I literally just came out here for 2 weeks, stayed in his home and counseled with him and argued with him on a daily basis about theology and scripture. And by the end of 2 weeks, just being in the word and I was just, the Lord had just kind of prepared me for those weeks. But at the end of 2 weeks time, I was a believer.
That's amazing.
But it was violent. It was a violent conversion.
What do you mean?
I just mean it was a highly emotional time, but you know, the Lord just really shook me up and took me. So
when you say violent, do you feel like there were things that you knew immediately would have to shift in you and change?
Oh yes. Yes. I mean, my whole life was going to have to change every habit that I had built. So yeah.
Even your way of thinking, I would think that would be one of the most difficult things is everything's going through this agnostic worldview, but then all of a sudden you're back to, not just back to square one, but a completely different worldview.
Yes. Yes. But I was so ready. It's a very sad world to live in when you have no walls and no ceilings, and suddenly to be back in a biblical worldview, just where you have structure to your thoughts again, it's a really relieving thing.
Can you tell me more about that? I don't understand what you mean about walls and ceilings.
Well, like with an agnostic worldview, you know, you don't have a floor. You know, the sky's the limit as far as what you can think and how you can interpret your world. But there's also no structure. There's no safety in that, because anything could be true, but also everything can be untrue. You know, it's a very scary world to live in.
So were you already writing before you became a Christian?
I was, yeah. I was writing. I guess I've been a writer as long as I can remember, but I did write kind of around during the 2 weeks of my conversion. I wrote like a 60-page document that was sort of my like conversion document almost. It was me kind of trying to reinterpret my whole history through the lens of scripture. But yeah, so then it was soon after that I was working at the newspaper and writing in volume, writing more than I'd ever written before. And that really prepared me to write this book, because the wheels were so well greased as far as just being in practice. You know how it is. You have to write regularly, or you really lose. Things get rusty. You know?
Yes. Yes. And every time I sit down to write and work on a new project, I think, have I forgotten entirely how to write? I don't know if I can do it anymore.
Yeah. Yes. So, have I lost everything that I need?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the book you've written. It's called, okay. I think I might have said the title already, but it's called Seeing Green, Don't Let Envy Color Your Joy. I would love to know why you wrote this book.
Okay. So I wrote it because envy was a huge problem for me. It was a huge problem in my own life. And that was the single reason why I ever got onto the subject. The first story in the book is about me and my sisters. I grew up in a musical family in Nashville, like in and around the music business. And when I was 15, I recorded a CD of jazz cover tunes because I was going to be like the female Michael Bublé in my mind. That's what I wanted to be. Yes. But I went to college soon after that, and I didn't have a work ethic when it came to music at all. So I kind of just let it lie, I guess. And a few years later, the sisters just below me, I'm one of seven siblings, but mostly girls. And the two girls just below me suddenly came out of the closet with their music that they had been secretly writing and just really incubating in secret, getting really good. And they decided to do this coffee shop gig in Nashville and invite us to it. And it was the first time any of us had ever heard what they'd been working on. So I just remember sitting there listening to them in the dark, and just, it was what they were doing was beautiful. It was just like these folky kind of little Nashville angels in harmony, you know, and I tears were, you know, running down my cheeks. And I just remember I was moved by what they were doing. But the next emotion that I had was real horror that somebody had come up behind and started to make something that was beautiful and work hard and do this, and that it was my sisters who were just, you know, right below me. And that's primarily the emotion I remember every time I had to go to one of their concerts for the next probably 3 or 4 years. They started a band with two brothers, and they started to really like tour, and they recorded, and every time I had to sit there and listen to them, it was more pain. It seemed like it just got more and more painful every time as they learned more and got better and better. And the glory of what they were doing was just too much. It was too painful. It was years later that I even, and it really affected our relationship.
Yeah, what I was wondering.
Yes. And we were very close. I mean, me and my siblings, we were all homeschooled. So we were together a lot, and we were real playmates, and we were practically estranged by the time these years of their doing music was over. We became completely out of touch with each other because I pulled away. I couldn't bear it. And
did they know why you were pulling away?
I don't think they did. I mean, it's not like I ever said anything to them or anyone else or myself even, you know, it's not something you even admit to yourself. So they had no idea. They just knew that things weren't the same. But it was around the time that I was getting married. It was, you know, I'd been a Christian for just a year or two, and me and these two girls all got married within the same year. And something about having to stand up in their wedding and having them stand up in my wedding and know that we were practically strangers just sort of flipped a switch, I think, for me to say, what is that? You know, what is going on in my heart? What is happening here? And envy, the word envy really just entered my awareness soon after that. So yeah, it was deeply personal to me to be writing about this subject.
Yeah. And, did you go to your sisters then after working through this? Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So I had to talk to them and tell them what was going on, you know, and with confessing envy, it's painful on many fronts, but the first hard thing is that you have to tell them, I thought you were better than me in a way of, in an area of life that is very valuable to me, which is already smarting and hurting if you are, you're already envious towards them. And then you have to say, and because of that, I wished that you would not do so well, that you would fail, basically. You know, I hated you in my heart. And yeah, I just can't think of anything that is more sort of icky to go and have to say to somebody. Writing, anytime that I was writing about it, I would send things to them first because I guess sort of to get their permission to continue and let others read, but also just to continue to explain to them, I think, what envy looks like and smells like and what was going on all that time. So
now when you went to them and told them, how did they respond?
Oh, just with total grace and readiness to get back in relationship. I've had to confess envy a handful of times to different people. But I've never had anybody meet me with anything but just grace and just total sort of an open arm posture. So
that's great.
So that's been great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think probably because anybody you've told that you've had envy toward, they know immediately what that's like because we all at some level deal with envy, but we don't really like to think about it. We don't really like to, at least for me, I don't like to think about it. I don't like to acknowledge that's what's happening inside of me. But could you help us to kind of think through how do we label envy? What is envy? What does it look like?
Yeah. So, I actually, one of the really helpful ways that I talk about what envy is, that was helpful to me, I mean, is, through this language of glory. I had read this essay by C.S. Lewis around the time that I sort of diagnosed the envy, the essay called The Weight of Glory. You're probably familiar.
I have read it. It's very good.
It's so great. Yes. And so it's not about envy at all, but you know, he just talks about glory, the glory that we long for and that we have this appetite for. And then he talks about how that will find its fulfillment when we stand before God at the end of time. And he looks at us and approves us, sort of finally approves and sees us and welcomes us in. Because of Christ, because of what Christ did. But somehow thinking about that glory appetite helped me to understand why envy is so painful, why it feels like it's striking at the very heart of who you are and who you, your identity and your deepest desires. It's like somebody is attacking you personally by being great in some way. And so I started to just think about the glory that other people wear, the fact that God he's put glory all in his creation, but the human beings who were made in his image are maybe the most glorious thing that he's created. And because of that, we find these glories in them that are very palpable to us and very powerful. And we respond to them, maybe in admiration, maybe in worship of God or man, but also maybe in hatred and resentment. Mm. And hatred and resentment, that is envy. Envy is it's different from jealousy a little bit. Sometimes people use them interchangeably, but jealousy is sometimes a righteous emotion. You know, if you're protecting something that actually is yours, like your husband maybe, or God protecting his people, you know, envy is never attributed to God, but jealousy is. Whereas envy is like, it's an anger and a resentment that God has given something to somebody else and not to you. So it's fixated on something that belongs to somebody else. And in some cases, it would be happy just to see the thing done away with. So there's sort of a destructive element to it. You know, if I can't have it, I don't even want them to have it, you know, where, you know, just like covetousness doesn't have that real hatred and resentment, you know, as part of it. So envy is very ugly. There's just really nothing like redeeming about it or cute, or, you know, it's very purely ugly.
So how did you begin to see that in your own life with your sisters? Mm-hmm. What was God doing to bring that to your attention through this essay by C.S. Lewis?
Well, the Lewis essay was almost like just the beginning of the solution in my heart. The problem, I was already aware of it. And it was just so obvious that I could not, that it was like their glory was burning me or something. I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to talk about it with other people. And the fact that it had really clearly interfered with our relationship and my love for them. Something was wrong, you know, and I don't remember where the idea of envy first sort of entered. But if you look at all the sort of facts of the case, it's very clear that was envy. Mm-hmm. And if it had been anyone else, if it had been not my sisters, I would have just left the relationship. I think I would have been able to just kind of exit. But you can't leave when it's your sisters. So that, you know, praise the Lord, I couldn't just have them out of my life. So,
oh, that's really true. And I think of the church in that too, that when we're committed to a church, that sometimes we come face to face with other people who, as you just said, we're kind of burned by their glory. And so let's turn our attention to that and just talk about friendship and relationships in the church and how do we experience envy. So I would love to hear from you if you've experienced this in friendship.
Yes, and I certainly have. So I've had to confess to other people as well. And one of the sort of structural things in the book is that I have chapters on different glories. So I have chapters on seven different glories that I just had noticed, you know, were powerful, I guess. There's like beauty, physical beauty and intelligence and charm is one of them, like that sort of magnetism of personality. Creative talent, like what my sisters had, and the glory of relationships. When you see other people in intimate, you know, relationship, two friends who are very close, for instance, or a woman who's has a great relationship with her husband or with her children. So these are the sort of the glories. And I've experienced, it seems like my envy has sort of shifted depending on the season that I'm in my life and what I'm maybe what I'm pursuing in that season the most or what I'm valuing the most in that season. So, you know, in the time when I was envying my sisters, I was ambitious, you know, specifically to get in music, I think. And at other times, you know, physical beauty has been very much a stumbling block to me. There's a lot of long story about that in the book. So, and then in another season, just after I became a believer, I was longing so much to learn this sort of steadiness of living, like just faithfulness. And mm-hmm. so a good friend of mine who had been a Christian for a long time and just was reaping this wonderful fruit of just kind of a steady character and an unemotional personality, you know, just sort of a hard, steady worker kind of mm-hmm. a personality. And she was just reaping this great fruit in her life. And I was sort of having to pick and bag up and throw out all my fruit, you know, mm-hmm. And just at a time in life when I was actually valuing character for the first time, her character was galling to me, you know. And so that was probably the next one that I had to make a confession to, was this friend, my steady friend, who is now a good friend. You know, it's just amazing how the Lord has restored these things. But I most recently, when I was actually turning in the manuscript for this book last year, so this story didn't even really make it into the main part of the book, but you know, just when I'm basically here, I am, I'm turning in the work. I'm supposed to be this envy expert, and suddenly mm-hmm. I turn around and am diagnosed again, you know, with this new envy in a new direction. And this time it was in the area of friendship, because friendship is sort of the soft spot in my life right now. Or over the past year or so.
And, what do you mean the soft spot?
Like, it's sort of the area of life that I think I'm feeling most vulnerable in, or the most desirous of improving. And suddenly I notice this woman in my circle who is the friend magnet that I remember. You mentioned the friend magnet in your book, your friendship book.
Yeah.
And as soon as I read that line, actually, I had the picture of this particular lady in my mind, where I was like, yeah, that's the friend magnet. And then around this time of turning in the manuscript, I suddenly realized I was making jokes about the friend magnet girl, to my husband, just like little, you know, just little sort of jokes, I guess, about how she was always in the middle or whatever. And cause she's one of these women like what you described, where she is so gracious. She is so fun to be around. She is a godly woman. She is, people are just very attracted to her. And in a time when that is the thing I would most like to be, mm-hmm. That's where the envy sort of sprang mm-hmm. up. So
you ahead. Keep talking about confessing this to the person.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people listening are probably cringing at that thought that they might actually have to acknowledge to someone else. So how did you know that you needed to go and confess that to them?
Well, it just wasn't going away. That's one way of knowing. Not, you know, it's not going to just, usually it's not going to just kind of seep away on its own. There are other ways of fighting envy that I talk about in the book, things like loving them, you know, looking at the glory and praising God for it, praying for them, praying that they would become even better at whatever it is that is bothering your flesh, praising them to their face. You know, just these are ways of kind of getting yourself onto their team. And you know, confessing the envy to God, calling it what it is when you're confessing that sin to God. But there will come a time when you have to decide, is this a situation where confessing to this person is the only way to move forward in this relationship? And I think one of the questions to ask is, would confession build a further rift between us, or would it help heal the relationship? And some of that may have to do with how close you have been to the person. You know, have they noticed that there's a wall up between you? Like with my sisters, we were closer and things had deteriorated. Or with this newest envy case with the friend magnet, we had never been close friends, but we had been in the same circle for a long enough time that she noticed there was some kind of something there where I was not allowing myself to be intimate with her. So usually they know that something's off or something's weird between you anyway. And I feel like if it's that case where you're close enough to them that they would have noticed, you know, they're not just a coworker, maybe two cubicles down, who you just have noticed and thought, oh, you know, the boss loves her or whatever, you know, just some sort of impersonal envy. If it's an impersonal case like that, I don't know, the first move should be for you to sit her down and confess your hate-filled heart right. towards her. Like, you remember yeah. me, my name is.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
That might be a little awkward, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not a good first move necessarily, mm-hmm. But in another case, like there may be no other way to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate how honest you're being about envy. I really appreciate you sharing those stories because I do think it's really hard to say out loud that we have these thoughts and feelings about people who are godly and who we yeah. respect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think one thing I see a lot in my own heart and I hear from other women in my church is kind of this desire to want to be included and to belong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned C.S. Lewis earlier. I love his essay about the inner ring.
Yes.
Have you read that?
I love it. Yes.
Yeah. He talks about how we all kind of have this desire to be on the inside mm-hmm. and we will spend our whole lives trying to be on the inside in whatever we most value. Yeah. And so I think for women a lot, that's relationships and mm-hmm. being on the inside of feeling like we belong. Mm-hmm. In whatever circle we want to belong in.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to speak to that because I think that has a lot to do with envy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the way that C.S. Lewis talks about that inner ring is, you know, he says those rings will always be there. You'll always find that there's sort of the unspoken social cues that tell you, you know, these folks are special and set apart mm-hmm. or, you know, these people have sort of this intimacy going. I think that pursuing the inner ring just for the sake of being on the inside of some circle that you think is important, I don't think that's ever going to be a healthy or a fruitful pursuit. I don't think that scripture really gives us any place for just trying to get on the inside of something for the sake of being on the inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a distinction in my mind between that desire, just sort of the social climbing desire, and just the legitimate desire that we have for intimacy mm-hmm. with people. And maybe one way of distinguishing them would be just to ask yourself, are you willing to pursue intimacy with other people besides those sort of prized folks, you know, the prized woman that you think is the lady you should be friends with or the, you know, the circle that you think you're supposed to be on the inside of. Because the other thing Lewis talks about is that once you get on the inside of a ring, there's always another ring. Like if the ring was the point for you, the joy will soon be gone because the sheen on the outside of the ring will disappear once you get on the inside of it. So you're going to have to find another ring to get into. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you're pursuing somebody because you have a shared love of something or, you know, there's an attribute in them that you just really admire and enjoy, that, you know, that's something that you can enjoy once you get close to them. Whereas, you know, the ring for the ring's sake is not going to be a lasting enjoyment.
Yes. I would also want to ask Tilly about, sometimes we find ourselves in that ring and we didn't pursue it. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm mm-hmm. pursuing this. I'm cunning. I'm trying to make my way in, but we recognize that we, at that time, God has given us the gift of really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to someone who is in that spot and they feel very intent on keeping that mm-hmm. and not really wanting to be open to new people or new relationships?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that you could defend that in any way as a Christian who knows how the church is supposed to work. I don't think that you can defend this position of, well, I just have my circle and I'm just going to keep my circle and nobody new needs to come in and nobody needs to go out. You know, we're a unit because mm-hmm. the unit is the church and the family of God. And that's not how it works. You know, the church is not like this concentric set of rings where, you know, you climb to the inside or something. It's a, you know, it's more like a fabric maybe with a bunch of different kinds of relationships and ways of relating to different people in the church. And, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's defensible, really, to behave that way. But we understand what the motive is. You know, we understand why you would want to. You just, mm-hmm. that's the best time. It seems like that's the best time in life when you're in that comfortable place of having a really good set of friends. That would be the great time to work on just your character of looking for the outsider and inviting them, you know, being a welcoming mm-hmm. sort of person to them. Because when you're the most comfortable, I think, or the most secure, is a wonderful time to begin stretching yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. When you're feeling vulnerable already, it's a more difficult time.
Mm-hmm. It really, you can see how there's insecurity on both sides, whether you're in the inner circle or you're mm-hmm. outside wanting yeah. in. There's a sense yeah. of insecurity if you're intent on finding some sort of comfort or safety or mm-hmm. security in people.
Yeah.
Because yeah, you can't keep yeah. it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'd love for you to talk about how you have seen insecurity playing into envy.
Mm-hmm. Well, envy is definitely a sin of insecurity. I mean, it's a sin of pride, but it's frustrated pride. It's kind of like, it's the sin of the underdog, I would say. There's always a feeling of inferiority that comes with envy, because it's always a response to you recognizing somebody being superior to you in some area of life, mm-hmm. Usually an area that you particularly value. So yeah, it's definitely, that's what it's all about. It's a smarting, writhing awareness that you're just not as good as somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways that I think one of the great ways to diagnose envy in your life is to look at the areas that you sort of lead with, even things that you do have some of, like if this is your primary glory and it's what you want people to know first about you, look at that and then say, what do I do when I meet someone who has more of this thing? Because there's always somebody who has more of that thing. And so can you get close to them? Can you be, you know, are you able to be intimate with people who are better than you in that area? It's not always about a thing that you don't have any of and someone else has some of. A lot of the time it's your peers. It's people who are actually very much like you, except maybe just that kind of extra step behind you. So,
yes, I was thinking for me, that's writing. And I've struggled a lot with that, comparing myself to other writers and what opportunities do they have. And when I open their book, wow, they're such a good writer. And I don't know that I could ever be that. And it can be where I start realizing I don't want to celebrate that person. I don't want to recommend that person's book or whatever. And I've really had to work through that with the Lord to just say, I can be faithful to what He's given me. He's given me this opportunity and He's given me this skill, and I can only use what I have, but I can use it for His glory and just be faithful to Him. That's all I can do.
That's right.
But I think you're right. It's the things that were most similar to us that really can cause that you realize, oh, I do struggle with envy. I didn't know it until I was faced with this person or this thing. But also I think differences sometimes, and maybe that would be different. Maybe that would be just comparison and looking for some sort of security that as we compare ourselves with people who are different, we maybe feel insecure about our own choices or our own lives. Do you think there's envy sometimes in differences?
I think so. I think I've had kind of snatches of it, and yeah, I mean, it's just a different kind of thing, because maybe you desire something and you may not know as much about it, or you may not know as much about what it would take to have that thing. Like say, you know, you're a writer and you run into a musician who's a great musician, and for a few minutes you're like, wow, you know, that's really amazing. You know, that cello music is kind of blowing me out of the water. And what would it, you know, but you have no idea. Like another cellist would know exactly what it took to make that person what she is today. Whereas you can really only imagine. So yeah, maybe the same kind of comparison doesn't take place, but you could still envy them for sure.
Yeah. So what are some of the processes you would encourage us to work through if we recognize we have envy in our heart toward a friend, let's say?
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to Now that we know it, what do we do with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think you've got to immediately be confessing. You've got to get yourself into a habit where you can confess to God right then when you first diagnose it. And then every time you have that, you know, you see them in church smiling at their husband or whatever, and you have that thought of, you know, that immediately, you know, just yeah. immediately, you know, start to recognize what those impulses or thoughts are and confess them on a regular basis. But then these sort of fake it till you make it ways of loving them, I really think leaning in towards them instead of away from them is really important, because the temptation is to kind of avert your gaze from the glory, you know, don't look at it because it's painful. Get out of their circle as much as you can, if possible, so you don't have to deal with it. But leaning towards them as a person is the only way you're going to kind of rehumanize them, but also loving them by really praying for them and praising them and being part of their life. But other ways, I think, you can fight envy with diligence. You were talking about like the writing envy. One of the ways that you can fight envy in writing is by kind of putting your shoulder to the plow and saying, this is the row that God gave me to hoe. I don't need to have my eyes on their row because that's not my work. I'm getting my hands kind of tangled up in their business by always, you know, comparing it with my own. I can stand before God and know that I've done my absolute best at the thing he gave me to do. And that really knocks a leg out from under envy. We remember the story of Cain and Abel when God says, if you do well, you know, your face, something about his face not falling, basically, because he was looking at his brother's work and not at his own work. And if we know that we can stand before him, having done what he gave us to do, there's a real security in that, I think.
Yeah. It's a more simplistic way of life for me. I think when I'm envying others, I have a lot in my mind. I'm adding a lot of things, and mm-hmm. it's hard for me to think simply and mm-hmm. Do work simply and live life mm-hmm. simply, because I'm convoluting
yeah.
what God has given me to do for that mm-hmm. day.
Yeah.
How can we respond if, say, a friend comes to us and says, I've been envious of you, or mm-hmm. we can sense that there's something in the relationship where maybe there's some envy from their end? Have you ever had that experience, and how would you yeah. say we could respond to that?
Yeah, well, I've had it happen maybe once or twice that when I confessed envy to somebody, they confessed envy back, maybe not in that same conversation, but soon afterwards, which is just interesting. It might be just that some kind of a rivalry had sprung up or something. Mm. But I just think there's something real disarming about somebody coming to you and saying that they envied you. I think the Lord kind of makes it where your first impulse is to be like, just to lean in and say, I love you. You know, I want to get past this and be, you know, close to you again. So, you know, go straight in on those impulses of just loving and being intimate. And I would also say it's helpful, having been on the other side of it so often, I would say it's really helpful if you continue to pursue them for friendship after that conversation has mm-hmm. happened. Like, they're going to get that off of their chest to you, and there's going to be real relief for them right away. But it's not going to be like immediately whatever glory it is that they were struggling over is going to go away. And I think another impulse you might have is to downplay whatever it is that they're seeing in you. Kind of be like, oh, that's that's nothing. Or you think this, but really it's more like this. And I don't know. I don't think that's really helpful. I think that's kind of like healing wounds lightly. Trying to downplay something that the Lord really has given. You know, the Lord is the one who does that and gives those things, those glories. So I don't think that's helpful. I think it's more helpful for you to just continually lean in towards them and pursue them, because they're still going to be a little bit at a disadvantage with you for a while.
And I would think it'd be hard not to try to downplay those things that they have highlighted.
Yeah.
Because
you
don't want to hurt them.
Exactly.
You're saying continue to do what God has given you to do, but also pursue the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If your goal is their ultimate health and spiritual wellness, you know, in God, it's not helpful to them to no longer, you know, for you to downplay what the Lord has done, because he is ultimately the one who does that. So yeah, it's just, that's sort of a shortcut that really is not helpful in the long run.
You mentioned earlier, Tilly, that friendship right now has been a soft spot for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
How are you handling that? How are you navigating that right now?
Yeah, well, I feel like it's been a long journey, but did I tell you this, that I reviewed your book in maybe January? When did it come out? When did the friendship book come out?
It came out, it'll be, oh gosh, I should know this. It'll be 2 years in maybe March or April.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Okay. So I had to review it for the Gospel Coalition, and this has happened several times that God has just really orchestrated my book review assignments, where the Lord has used book reviews in my life, where I review a book and it's just the right book at the right time. So I just had a baby when that friendship book came out, and in the baby blues period is when I tend to see how weak my friendships are, I think, or just at least feel that they're very weak because I'm lonely. And it was definitely just that season where I was like, something is not right. I don't have the close friends that I need to have. And just reading about somebody else, another adult woman, you know, struggling with sort of the same things was so helpful. I definitely, right now I'm in kind of a quandary about the idea of how close of a friend do I need to have in my life. I've given up the idea that I really need to have that one great close friend, because I haven't had that in many years since I was in college and kind of had like an unhealthfully close best friend. Yeah, you're nodding because you know.
Yes, I know. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that sort of codependent relationship had broken up very painfully, and since then I haven't gone after that again. You know, I haven't pursued that kind of a friend again. And I was just telling someone, you know, a few weeks ago, I don't know if I'm settling for less intimacy right now in my life than I really should be. I think because I've said I don't need that one friend, the best friend, it's possible that I'm still on the hook to pursue further intimacy than I have right now in my friendships. So I tend to run impersonally. I think my default position is to not be as personal as I ought to be.
Mm-hmm. I think some of that probably comes with being a pastor's wife. Not that you are impersonal with people, but there's a sense of self-protection that can set in, or who can I share things with, or who will care for me? And that sometimes can be really hard to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also I also think that God sometimes allows seasons of loneliness for our good.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be hard to figure out, okay, is this a season of loneliness that God's trying to use for my good, or am I not
just being lazy?
I not putting in the effort that is needed? And I've actually been going through a very similar season, and I think that actually God used one of my friends who has walked through some difficult what you just described of kind of emotional dependence. And so then she went the opposite direction and was like, well, I just don't want to ever do that again. Mm-hmm. And she was the one who said, she sent me Psalm 25 and just said, the Lord will show you his ways. Just pray for him to show you his ways, and he will direct your steps, and he will show you his ways. And so I think I'd been trying to figure it out. I've been trying to figure out friendship a lot. Like, what do I need to do? And who do I need to pursue? And what do I need to say to this person? And just really trying to figure out a plan that I could attack loneliness with. And that was really freeing for me, for her to send that to me and realize, okay, God will help me, but it's just a matter of waiting on him, and waiting on him is not what I like to do. I want to figure out a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Steps 1, 2, 3. Yeah. What do I need to do?
But I think what you're describing is what we all feel, that friendship is difficult. It's not simple. It's not easy. It is sometimes very painful. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're giving voice to what a lot of us feel and what we walk through. Mm-hmm. It's not a linear thing. In other words, I think in life we think, oh, once we find that best friend, we'll be fine. And it's all set for life. And it's really not like that. There's seasons of life where it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I appreciate your time today and helping us work through this topic of envy.
Thank you so much for having me. I have been listening to this season of your podcast and really enjoying it. So it's fun for me to listen and then to join.
Soon you will listen to yourself on here. Well, Tilly's book is called Seeing Green, Don't Let Envy Color Your Joy. And I encourage everybody to go out and get a copy and really face some of those hard things that are in our hearts in the areas of envy. So thank you, Tilly.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
You are definitely going to want to grab a copy of Tilly's book. It's called Seeing Green. I've linked to it in the episode's show notes so you can find out more about it. Friends, join me every Wednesday, the day after By Faith releases, on my Instagram stories where I answer your questions from the week's episode. What do you want to know or to talk about after listening to my conversation with Tilly? You can find me on Instagram at ChristineHoover98 and let's chat. Also, join me next week as I talk with Christy Onyebwile about friendship for the pastor's wife. Even if you're not a pastor's wife, I think this episode will be really helpful for you in giving you insight into your pastor's wife. And if you're not a pastor's wife, now might be a good time to invite your pastor's wife to listen to By Faith with you. Perhaps it will even spark some good conversations between you. Friends, thanks so much for listening to By Faith. Meet me back here next week, and until then, keep walking forward by faith.